It's summer, and it's hot, and I'm off working on a special project, so I'm bringing you this great show, which was originally broadcast May 28th, 1 year ago. I'll be back next week with a brand new show. So I'm bringing you one of the best, The War on Wonder, Take Two.
And now it's time for the Wild Side News with your host, Sydney Wildsmith.
Mayday, Mayday, it's right around the corner. But this Mayday may be a Mayday for help. The Earth needs help. That's our job, you and me, and probably everyone you know. It's time to do whatever we can to bring peace to the valley. Because the more we look around, the more it seems like there's a war on wonder. Today, we cover two important stories. One of giant big fish, the other of a legendary pack of wolves. Each suffered a great loss, and there's a story for us all in the telling. When we return here on the Wild Side News.
Welcome back to the Wild Side News, and now, Sydney Wildsmith.
I want to welcome all of you to another Voice of the Earth broadcast on good old www.wildsidenews.com. It's been well over a year since I began the Wild Side News, and it's been, for me, what I hope it has been for you who listen regularly, and there are now thousands of you, an ongoing education about the state of the mystery. I was thinking about opening the show with a short reading from one of my favorite nature writers, but as there are so many, I paged through a collection of some of the early writers and came to an unsettling conclusion. Namely, the voice of the earth has changed through time. Nature writers of the past wrote of the wonder with a pure voice. Listen. Walt Whitman. Now I see the secret of the making of the best persons. It is to grow in the open air, and to eat and sleep with the earth. John Muir. This grand show is eternal. It is always sunrise somewhere. The dew is never all dried at once. A shower is forever falling. Vapor is ever rising. Eternal sunrise, eternal sunset, eternal dawn and gloaming, on sea and continents and islands, each in its turn, as the round earth rolls. And of spring, Helen Keller wrote, what a joy it is to feel the soft, springy earth under my feet once more, to follow grassy roads that lead to ferny brooks, where I can bathe my fingers in a cataract of rippling notes, or to clamber over a stone wall into green fields that tumble and roll and climb in riotous gladness. And Sigurd Olsen. Beauty is composed of many things and never stands alone. It is part of horizons, blue in the distance, great primeval silences, knowledge of all things of the earth. It is so fragile it can be destroyed by a sound or thought. It may be infinitesimally small or encompass the universe itself. It comes in a swift conception wherever nature has not been disturbed. These voices made up the body of nature writers. But the voices of the earth have changed. For we have changed the earth, and the wonder is under siege. There is a war on wonder, and I, for one, rise each day to stop it, and I invite you to do the same. This last week had two unique stories about the war on wonder. Here in San Diego, a big fish died. Was killed, in fact. A giant black sea bass, known to divers for years as Blackie, in the La Jolla Cove Reserve. It became overnight the pale male of San Diego. People mourn the death of this fish. We tell this story in this first segment of the Wild Side News, following the news. And in Alaska, just outside the boundaries of Denali National Park, a shot rang out and killed the alpha male of a legendary Talkeet wolf pack that has been researched for over 50 years. Weeks earlier, his alpha mate was killed in a leg trap just beyond the legal border of the park. And weeks before that, well, we have good reason to believe that that long legacy of wonder is now gone. We go in-depth as we talk with Dr. Gordon C. Haber, who has been independently researching this pack for nearly 40 years. No one knows as much about them, has spent as much time with them, has fought so hard to protect them as he. Stay tuned for segments 2 and 3 as we try to understand what this war on wonder is really doing to our world. Each week I try, as best I can, to project a hope and inspire us all to quicken our awareness that the wonder is waning and that we must stand up for the earth. Because if we don't, the killers of wonder will win. Today, a tribute to two great creatures who took the chance to play and dance in peace with us and who now reside as dead trophies in the minds of two small men. Thanks for coming along. But first, the news. Following 2 years of ongoing drought, western states have been warned about the potentials for yet another summer of severe forest fires. Particularly vulnerable are forest areas in southern New Mexico and Arizona, where the drought has been particularly intense. To counter these increased threats, the Interior Department and the U.S. Forest Service have thinned trees and removed brush on 4.2 million acres. Funding for thinning and brush removal has been increased from $811 million to $867 million, focusing much of the efforts at removal of combustibles around populated regions. Hikers, campers, hunters, and everyone else is encouraged to be particularly careful with any potential fire hazards in high fire danger areas this summer. President Bush is speaking up about the environment in an effort to address the root causes of high energy prices that are continuing at record levels. A barrel of oil is now holding at around $55. Bush's recommendations will focus on streamlining the lead-up to the development of more nuclear energy plants, using deserted military bases for locating new oil refineries, providing tax credits for hybrid and fuel cell cars, and the use of clean diesel fuels. The one drawback is that each of these proposals will take years to implement. Meanwhile, the price of gas is ghastly. Just about the time that we hear environment in every newscast, the Office of Management and Budget has withdrawn all funding, namely $14 million earmarked for providing and promoting environmental education programs in the nation's schools. To counter this measure, a group called the Campaign for Environmental Literacy has developed a website at www.fundee.org. www.funde.org. Through this website, the public can send letters to their senators and representatives to encourage them to restore funding the environmental education projects. The effort has the support of such groups as the American Zoo and Aquarium Association, National Wildlife Federation, Audubon, and the World Wildlife Fund. Again, that address is www.funde.org. My recommendation would be to provide audio cassettes of Walden to every school in America. Contact me if you like that idea. And the Rainforest Action Network has gotten another financial giant to commit to forest sustainable practices as corporate policy. Following last year's adoption of similar standards by Citigroup and Bank of America, J.P. Morgan Chase is now on board to do the right thing. The comprehensive environmental policy is designed to address global warming and deforestation and recognize the rights of indigenous peoples. J.P. Morgan Chase's new policy includes following guidelines in alliance with the Forest Stewardship Council, which certifies woods as coming exclusively from forest and community-friendly sources. Recognizing the rights of indigenous individuals and communities to self-determination over issues affecting their lands and territories, and encouraging clients to develop carbon mitigation plans to reduce greenhouse gases. J.P. Morgan Chase, welcome to the future. May all of your children and your children's children flourish and learn to buy energy-efficient cars. And a new report by the Environmental California Research and Policy Center maps out a plan for California to achieve its million solar roofs goal and phase out the rebate program by the year 2016. stating that lowered costs of solar power will offset the rebates through the years ahead. The report projects a break-even point in 10 years. Now that's a bright idea for a better world. And a report last night on NBC News says that half of all honeybees in the U.S. are gone, primarily to a small mite that infests beehives and can quickly decimate a colony. Although some may say, good riddance, we must remember that these little workers put food on our tables. Their mystical work, cross-pollinating our crops, trees, fruit, and flowers that evolved in some unfathomable way, is yet another example of just how complex this little world of ours is. Say a prayer for the honeybees tonight when you go to bed. And that's the news. This week in San Diego, along the luxurious La Jolla Colony Cove, people were stunned to learn that a fish had died. It was, yes, a fish of legend, and yes, a friend to those who dove into the ocean sanctuary where such fish lived in safety. Year after year, divers were met by this fish named Blackie. He was like an underwater neighborhood dog. He swam up to his diver friends and took their pats and panderings. And then the war on wonders struck, suddenly, and Blackie was killed. To many, murdered by a senseless act by an unimaginably unconscious, uncaring, and unforgivable diver who, with one finger, sent a spear straight on through this gentle giant. Now joining us from La Jolla, California, is Rod Watkins, who is the owner of Scuba San Diego. Welcome to the Wild Side News, Rod.
Oh, thank you very much.
You have a scuba service. Tell us about Scuba San Diego.
Well, Scuba San Diego is a diving school and diving guide service in San Diego, and we service over 40 different hotel locations as well as directly off the Internet. People who wish to experience La Jolla Cove Ecological Reserve call us, and we would take them out on guided tours of the kelp forest to look at the different kinds of sea life there. The cove is a really unique resource. It's one of the oldest marine reserves on the West Coast, established in 1929. So it has a really good representation of what a nearshore ecosystem would be like quite some time ago.
You have a particular fascination with this area, the kelp forest. Tell people what you experience and what people might experience when they're in La Jolla Cove and scubaing and skin diving in the kelp forest.
Well, of course, the kelp forest is a unique experience for any diver. It exists, this particular form of kelp, the giant kelp, Macrocystis pyphora, exists only here on the west coast of the United States. And it can grow from depths of 135 feet to the surface. It's actually in the 45-foot range where we would be taking our guests, because it's the nearshore area that has the most abundant sea life in it, and of quite amazing size and age. Some of these animals have been there, like I said, undisturbed for the most part for up to 75 years.
And so it is literally huge. I mean, these are huge plants that you're able to swim amongst.
The kelp, of course, is harvested commercially here by a local company. But in the La Jolla Cove Ecological Reserve, the harvesting of the kelp is not permitted. This has presented a pretty stable hideaway for certain forms of sea life.
And that actually is part of the basis of the story. This week, there was an unfortunate event that happened in the reserve. And some people may say not. There was a mishap. Why don't you tell our listeners what happened?
An individual actually entered the reserve from a powerboat. Powerboats are not permitted inside the reserve itself, but this particular case, they came up to the edge of the reserve and entered the water with a spear gun and scuba equipment, passed into the reserve and speared a giant black sea bass. The scientific name is Stereolepis gigas. And these guys can get up to 500 pounds. I mean, they're majestic fish. And I would equate swimming next to one to being like next to a Volkswagen underwater with fins on it. They're quite gregarious. They're very amiable. They have no fear of divers at all, and they represent no danger to divers. This individual speared this fish for, guess for his home plate, I don't know what he would do with 200 pounds of meat. This was about a 50-year-old fish. And I've been diving with these fish in the cove since 1968 myself. So this was like having one of your best friends murdered.
But now we're talking now about a fish, and a lot of people don't equate fish with a very personal friend, particularly not in the situation where you're out in an open ocean. And yet, that's what you're telling me.
Well, fish, there's some people who are actually afraid of fish, and other people just don't like them next to them in the water, and for that reason don't even snorkel. And we've come across people like this over the years in our business. But actually, there's no end to the wonder and the beauty of these animals. And in this particular setting, these fish are so rare that you wouldn't see them. I only know three other places on the West Coast where you could actually count on seeing these fish regularly on a single scuba dive. We can almost guarantee one of our guests that they're going to see one of these fish in Mahoy Cove. Mm-hmm. In fact, we've had people travel only to see these fish from Los Angeles, from Europe. I mean, we've had people travel to see the kelp forest from all over the world, because I suppose the California coastline is renowned for the kelp forest, but not so much for the sea life. I've been diving in these waters for 37 years. I can tell you without a doubt that there's very few places on the coastline where you would ever hope to see one of these fish. And a lot of the other fish in the reserve, in the sizes that we see them, like calico bass, which are prized also by anglers, up to 20 inches and 24 inches are common inside the reserve, where you would never find these fish in that size at the Channel Islands because they've been fished out, so to speak. I can remember my first dive in Anacapa Island in 1968 and diving into what was just the most incredible paradise of life, being surrounded immediately by fully mature sheephead bass and calico bass, sea lions and abalone all over the bottom. And today, if you went to Anacapa Island, if you were a diver from 1968 and you hadn't been diving in the last 37 years, and you went to Anacapa today, you would think the entire planet died. The La Jolla Cove area has been, they've been trying to protect it for, you know, like I said, 75 years. So if somebody was to ask me where I would go in California to have the best sea life experience from the standpoint of fish, I would have to say La Jolla Cove. And if you get even a moderately clear day there, you're going to remember that experience for a long, long time. We have people from all over the world come and dive with us here and say, that was just a brilliant experience, and can't believe the size of that fish.
Here is one sea bass, giant black sea bass, that was unfortunately killed. And it's really creating quite a stir in the community here and in the dive community because, as you say, this fish perhaps was specifically known to the divers.
Oh, you can tell these fish by their markings. There's another old-time diver here who's in freediving out there, and he had a name. I didn't realize it, but he had a name for this fish. He called it Blackie. It was particularly well-marked. We've pretty much pinpointed the locations where they hang out most regularly, and that's why I say we can almost guarantee a diver that they're going to see a black sea bass. I had a lady, I took her out personally because she was from some dive club in Los Angeles, and she said she's never seen one. She's been to Catalina numerous times to try and see them at Italian Gardens and never connected, and I said, well, come down here. I said, if you don't see one, you will not have to pay for the time. She didn't believe me. She saw five of them in one dive.
Wow.
And she was amazed. I've counted 28 on certain dive about 2 summers ago. And depending on the time of year, they will move from a one spot in the reserve to another spot as a group. In fact, they are members of the grouper family. And groupers are called groupers because they group up.
That's great.
And they kind of hang out, you know. We've been on dives where we've gone with the group of groupers, and they just kind of mill around, and eventually they get bored and swim them off at a distance, and then we'll go away and we'll come back, and they'll be in the same spot again when we come back.
are you able to actually sort of establish a relationship? Do they recognize people? Do you get that sense?
They have these parasites on their nose that they carry around with them, and they look like little white hairs on their forehead. And I've gotten familiar with one to the point where he's just about ready to let me pick the parasites out of his forehead like a cleaner fish would. And I've heard of a couple divers who knew Blackie well enough to actually, he would come up to them and they would stroke him and he'd just swim off and then come back. When you're diving regularly out there, you are so happy to see these guys when you come up to them. You feel like, oh, there's my friends again, you know. And they're like having buddies out there in the water column. And it's really tragic because everybody was as ill-informed as this individual who shot this fish, and there certainly wouldn't be any more of these gentle giants to look at. And then it would be sad for my guests and more so for me because I'm there every day and my dive masters are there every day. It would really be sad not to see these creatures in their natural habitat undisturbed. I saw one swallow about a 4-pound lobster whole. I saw one suck at about a 20-inch calico bass. I saw a calico bass just disappear in front of my eyes in front of this fish, and he hardly even moved. So they're amazing predators, but at the same time, relative to divers, they're curious but non-threatening in any way. I cannot imagine anyone ever feeling threatened by one of these giant fish. Took a student out. She was a little girl. She must have weighed all of 98 pounds. One of the bigger, there's a 300-pounder out there, came right up to us, and this is her fourth dive ever, and got between her and me, and it was the most amazing thing. I looked across to see where Tanya was, and all I saw was fish. And at the time, she was about 5 feet tall. And I was in full scuba gear, and I couldn't see around the fish to see where she was, so... When the fish passed by and I saw her again, she was just like waving her arms in the air. She couldn't believe it. You know, she was so excited.
That's great.
And when we got out of the water, she said, "God, as long as I live, I'm never going to forget this moment on this dive." And I'm thinking, you know, how can anybody be so completely out of touch with the natural world and completely out of touch with realization that he's entering a protected area and take one of these majestic creatures and kill it for no reason at all. Yeah, I'm still having a hard time getting my mind around what this individual did out there, really. The single most curious thing about these groupers is that they just hang out there, and when we find them, they're apparently doing nothing. They're like a bunch of guys at the bar, you know. And they just seem to hang there together, and I guess they I don't know when they hunt. I've been out there at night, and rarely see them at night grouped up like we see them in the daytime. In fact, I can remember seeing them at night, but only one individual at a time, whereas in the early morning when we go out there, we can see several, usually three, four, and this one occasion that I saw up to 28 of them, all just hanging out. Maybe it's like after a tough night of hunting in the dark, maybe they all just hang out during the daytime. In the 20s and 30s, these things were taken off the piers here, like Santa Monica Pier.
Mm-hmm.
Oceanside Pier, the pier in front of the Hotel Del Coronado here, which is a pretty famous tourist landmark here in San Diego. Back in the 20s, they were catching them daily, you know, 300, 400, 500 pounders. Mm-hmm. They finally wiped them out. The bottom line is, if we don't set aside even more areas as no-take zones, then we're going to guarantee the non-existence of fishing stocks and the non-existence of places like La Jolla Cove to go and actually see these animals in the wild. And without doubt, this fish just ambled up alongside the diver and was hanging there. And he probably fired the spear from less than a foot away from the fish.
Rod, if people wanted to get the chance to see a sea bass, can they contact you?
Online, you can go to scubasandiego.com or just give us a call. We're in the Yellow Pages in San Diego. You can email us off our website. We have pictures, actually, on the website of several different types of fish that frequent the La Jolla Cove Ecological Reserve. And if you're not a diver, you like wild things, you can see one in captivity at Stephen Birch Aquarium, which is associated with the Scripps Institute of Oceanography here in La Jolla, very near La Jolla Cove. So if you don't want to get wet and put a scuba tank on your back, you can check one of these beautiful fish out. So if you're not a diver, I encourage you to come down and take a look at our Birch, Stephen Birch Aquarium here.
Well, it's so sad that Blackie has gone, but perhaps his legacy will inspire people to pay a lot more attention, even to big fish.
Obviously, we just don't want his life to go for nothing. And if people can get tuned in to the necessity to enforce our fish and game regulations, and if people who are training divers and people who are going fishing are encouraged to study and understand the regulations and laws related to fishing and spear fishing and commercial fishing, and everybody becomes aware of the absolute necessity to observe those rules, and I think there is hope. We do need to establish more permanent reserve zones in the coastal region, not so much the offshore. The Channel Islands, of course, is obvious, but in coastal California, we need to identify sensitive areas and set those aside as well.
Rod Watkins with Scuba San Diego, I want to thank you for being on the Wild Side News, and I hope we have a chance to talk again, and I encourage people to go and check out Scuba San Diego.
Well, thank you very much for this opportunity to talk about our friend Blackie, who no longer is with us, and he's got some brothers out there, so we're going to try and do our best to spread the word that this is something that people need to pay attention to.
Well, Blackie's legacy just reached around the world, so his spirit lives on.
Okay, thank you very much.
What is the difference between these two divers, the one that thrills and the one that kills? Somewhere in that explanation lies the legacy of this war on wonder. When we continue, we head on up to Alaska, to the great Denali National Park, where the war on wonder struck again. The legendary Talklat wolves may have disappeared forever. When we return, a tribute to a friend, on this special Voice of the Earth edition of the Wild Side News.